20 minutes there. First of all, I think, what was that second song that we sang? Does Jesus Care? I think that might have been only the second or third time I've ever heard that song. So it's new to me. So is that like a normal, traditional one for you guys? Oh, that's great. Anybody else, is that fairly new to you? Okay, Dick, Liberty. Okay, it's not, you knew it? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, there's four of us. So anybody else over here? Everybody else familiar? Okay. So everybody who's been in Lima knew it. So you did good. I just... No, obviously they sang. They knew it, but I was not. No. No, I thought you did great. And then, you know, obviously we're remembering Jesus' sacrifice. We also almost got the opportunity to see Davey's sacrifice. And then Davey handled it perfectly, just like Jim Harbaugh in his introductory press conference. A lesser athlete would have fallen, you know? A lesser athlete than Davey Wilson would have fallen. And so just keep that in mind. That's right. I bet. I'd even enjoy watching it now, Davey. All right, Hebrews chapter 11. You know, the thought last week was we would maybe preach through verses 7 through 16, and we did a good job. We got through verse 7. So we'll start in verse 8. So, Hebrews 11 and verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place where he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive even beyond the proper time of life, so she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore also there was born of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of the heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. All these died in faith without having received the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they had went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Taking a look at Abraham this afternoon, and we see that beginning in verse 8, by faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed. When I say faith of Abraham, what comes to your mind? Well, I'm looking for some feedback here. I say faith of Abraham, what comes to your brain? Anything? Following God, leaving home? Anything else? Yeah, I think that's a huge one. Being uncomfortable. Yeah, and we'll talk about that a lot next week, but that idea there is that he is willing to give the promised son, Isaac, up. And he goes through the thought process and consideration without specific evidence towards that God is able to raise Isaac from the dead, because he had seen the evidence and worked the reasoning process through that God was able to do that. It was just absolutely incredible. Anything else? All right. So you absolutely, all those things come to our mind. You know, one of the things in talking about this passage of Scripture, his destination is unseen, right? And he gave up that which is seen, that which is immediate, and that which is physical, to obey the call of God. and to obey the call of God for that which is unseen. He's looking for an inheritance, and he's like, don't know what that's going to look like, man. But he was looking for a city that has foundations, as the text goes on to say later. And that city which has foundations, he knew was not going to be found here on the earth. And we'll dig into that in a little bit. I appreciated all the feedback there, but as Bob pointed out, there's a lack of comfort. There's a lack of comfort. Go back to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis 12. Starting in verse 1. The Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. And the one who curses you, I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. 75! I mean, that's no spring chicken. Now, you may say that, you know, 75 then is different than 75 now, but remember when Sarah was 90? In Genesis 18, verses 10 through 12, she called herself old, right? And then in this passage, okay, God, when Abraham is, 100, calls Abraham as good as dead. It's kind of interesting for a guy that lived another like 60 years or so, right? As good as dead. This is not that much different than it is today. He's 75. He says, okay, leave all everything that's comfortable to you. And Abram says, okay. You know, it's interesting. People have realistic conversations. I don't know if they're correct or accurate, but people in the world have legitimate concerns. Can I really start a new and different career at 40? People, like, they have those wonders, right? Like, you know, there's a few different groups that I'm a part of, and there's real trepidation. Like, 40? I don't know, man. It's pretty late, right? I don't know if I can go back to school. It's been a long time since, you know, like, this. People have those concerns because they're like, man, like, there's a cost benefit that happens there, right? And so Abram is 75. God calls and he goes. Abram pursues the inheritance because it's worth it to him. And in pursuing that inheritance, it's going to be necessary to leave the old things behind. And I think that we can draw a connection there right away. If we're going to pursue the inheritance that God has for us, it's going to be necessary to leave the old things behind. Because those things are not, that city is not the city that the Lord has for us. The Lord has a better country for us to pursue. We are the ecclesia of God, those who are called out of the world. And we must remember that we have to leave behind the old to pursue the new. We can't carry the things with us that separated us from God in the first place to the new life, to the new country. He says, leave behind, right? Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land, well, I shall show you. Well, don't we see that play out in many a Christian's life? Even those Christians who are looking to have an impact on those who are surrounding them, a lot of times what happens is they ostracize you, right? Because if you're willing to take certain stands, man, all of a sudden the things that we have in common aren't so much anymore. And you used to be all right, but then you became this fanatical Christian person, and I'm not so sure anymore that we really want to have anything to do with one another. right? And so there is a going forth that is done, that the stuff, the new wine can't be put into the old wineskins. And a lot of times we talk about that you can't mix systems together, right? You can't have a little bit of law in there with the law of liberty. But Abraham knows that it's worth it to pursue the inheritance, and we can't bring the things from the life that brought us death into the country which we have life in. And so Abram was called, and he answered the call. Well, as Christians, aren't we in that same boat? Aren't we those who have been called, who have then answered the call? To whosoever will. The Spirit says, come, right? And he answers the call. And Abraham lived as an alien in a foreign land, looking for the land to come. And I know this is familiar, but it's worth going over, because there's a tendency that we feel isolated. There's a tendency that we feel ostracized in the world, and we have to understand that that's what we call normal, because we're not from here. So sometimes it's like, well, why is it this way? And it's this way because the Lord wants us to seek a city which has foundations, not the immediate physical realm that the rest of the world is placing their hope upon. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter, the second chapter. Let's go ahead and start in verse 9. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. For you once were not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts, which wage war against your soul. So we are strangers and aliens in this world. But we are the people of God, a people for his own possession. And so that leads us to a question: where do we find our value and worth? In being a possession of the Lord, or fitting in with the world? Because just like you can't serve God and mammon, you're going to have to choose between this country, if you will, and the better country. And so Abraham said, the pursuit of the inheritance is better, and I'm going to live as an alien in the foreign land. But sometimes that was pretty uncomfortable. If you don't think so, why do you think he used, not once, but twice, the line, oh, she's my sister? If he's comfortable, if he's happy with how everything's working, and he's pretty satisfied with his position, feeling comfortable and confident, he's not going to use the line, oh, she's my sister, because they might kill me because she's beautiful. Not going to do that, guys. He's uncomfortable. I don't know about you, but generally, I don't like being uncomfortable. And I'll tell you what I mean. Like, I will, if it is worth it, you know, we'll be as uncomfortable as we need to be to get the job done. For instance, 15-passenger van with kids going to Montana for youth camp is not particularly comfortable. I'm just letting you know. It's not real comfortable. Okay, but it's what needs to be done, so we get her done. But tell you what makes me even more than just creature comforts, I like to know what's going on. Okay? Now, I have an older brother and an older sister, and they're so much older than me that, like, there's kind of a family expert on birth order by the name of Kevin Lehman, and he talks about birth order and family and yada yada. It's interesting if you're into that sort of thing, and probably lame if you're not. But he would consider me a firstborn and an only because, you know, my brother is 12 years older than me and my sister's 14 years older than me. So it doesn't really feel like, you know, like not exactly a lot of family dynamics going on there between me and my brother and my sister. So as a firstborn and an only, I like to know what's going on. I want to know what the plan is. I want to know what time we plan on executing the plan. I want to know the details of the plan, right? And I want to know the plan Bs to the plan because I'm a firstborn and an only. Is that from a young age, used to relating with adults, and I like to know what's going on, okay? I don't like to call it a control freak. I like to call it being informed, okay? There's a difference, okay? And so I like to be informed of certain things. Well, you think it was uncomfortable for Abraham to not know where he's going? You know, Wasion, we were, and here too, we're praying for, you know, Bill and Rowan, Davey and Sue are going to leave. And Bill has been very like vocal about the fact that we don't know where we're going, right? He's really playing that up. We don't know what we're doing. We don't know where you're going, where we're going. And I can appreciate that. But I told Bill, I was like, hey, I didn't have a real agenda for my trip in July. And that's why I went through the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And you had to come rescue me in Munising. I said, you know, if you get stuck, I'm happy to come rescue you. I said, I don't know that I'm going to be any help, but I'm happy to come get you. But I bring that up because it's one thing to maybe take a trip or a vacation, and it's kind of nice and relaxing to be able to do things at your own rate of speed, to be able to do what you feel like doing. That is a terrible way to live. That is a terrible way to live. But you think about Abraham, it's like, Lord says, go. All right. And so he obeys the call. Well, as aliens and strangers in a self-interested, self-absorbed world, it's still our job to obey the call. And it's going to be uncomfortable. And we're not always going to know what to expect. But the point is to obey the call because we're searching for a city that has foundations. And what a contrast to this present world. This present world is just like a city without foundations. In going back to Hebrews chapter 11, there in verse 9, it talks about how they were dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob. One thing briefly here. It was interesting. Dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob. Notice that the promises that are made to Abram are reiterated both to Isaac and to Jacob. Okay, that's helpful to know because particularly if you're working through some of the timeline stuff and trying to make the numbers work while not diminishing any of the scriptures, like for instance, that fourth generation, you know, the Amorites there, the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete there in Genesis 15, and it talks about the fourth generation. You got to understand that the count needs to come after Jacob. See, people try to count from Abraham, and the math never works. And so they're like, well, let's just condense the timeline. Okay? The math works if you go after Jacob. And just like here, this is kind of snuck in there. But what you do have is the reiteration of the promise is very much not snuck in there. Right? So it's just helpful to know that as you're doing some of your Old Testament historical timeline studies. But you know, they lived in tents. Well, there's a couple things here. A tent. Now, you guys know me, and I don't do camping, right? That's not my jam, okay? It's not what I'm loving, okay? But one of the things about tents is that they are temporary, right? And so Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, living in tents, it paints us a good picture of how we are in this world. There are certain things that necessarily call to our attention. Example, if the roof of your tent, okay, is torn, you should fix the roof of your tent, right? Whether you got to, you know, whatever that looks like, you patch it, whatever you got to do, you do what you got to do to stop the water from coming in on you, especially if you're living in said tent, right? And we have those things in our lives that they have to be attended to, okay? And some of those things God has designed specifically for our good. If a man does not work, neither shall he eat, right? And so there are certain things of this life that we cannot, or that we must attend to, if we put it that way. Giving an example. It's actually a really sad story, but it's what pops to my mind right now. There was a guy that was about a year behind me in high school. He went to the local public school, and he was a phenomenal basketball player. Just a really, really good athlete, especially for that level. And he was everybody's friend. So I don't know. He must have been about 6'6 or so. Everybody's friend. And really, really good basketball player. Was kind of raised in a little bit of a rougher household and that sort of thing. And, you know, probably wasn't as good in high school as he could have been because of some of the lack of opportunities that he had. But he was still stand out. He was really stand out. Well, he went away. I didn't see him for years and years and years. He was everybody's friend. You know, even though he was, you know, a good athlete, you know, people might have labeled him as a jock. Everybody loved him. He was just friendly to everybody he knew. Okay. And he went away and something happened. I think he got involved in a lot of drugs, and there were some damage done that it doesn't look like is going to be undone for this young man. But I ran into him later, and we started to talk, and he got into this religious kick. But it was like nutso, okay? Like, whatever he was saying had, like, very little, like, he was using Bible terms, but there was no connection to reality whatsoever. And I was like, well, you know, maybe we could get together and, like, study the Bible, right? And I'm trying to gauge, because it wasn't immediate that he had mostly lost his mind, right? It just wasn't clear at first. And so, you know, I started to talk to him, and I was like, well, where do you work? He's like, well, I don't work. So how do you live? The Lord provides. What? What are you talking about, man? It's like, yeah, the Lord provides through something called WORK. That's how the Lord provides, right? You know, and again, I really think that there's some major issues there. He definitely could work, but he's not firing on all cylinders. But there's this idea, okay, that somehow, oh, it's just going to be provided for. And that's not the reality, right? Is that sometimes the tent needs to be mended. The tent needs to be taken care of. But here's the main point, guys. Don't forget it's just a tent. It's a temporary structure. That's not the city. That's not the inheritance. It's short term. And that's what Satan wants to do, is that Satan wants to call our attention to the things of the tent all of the time. because there are things that need attended to with the tent, if that's what you're looking for, isn't there? There's always something else that can be done with the tent. And so Abraham realized that this is a temporary structure, and he treated it that way. We got to realize that our life here is for the purpose of serving King Jesus, for the purpose of living for the inheritance, for the purpose of setting our treasures, our affection on the things above where we truly are. It's kind of interesting. I came across this a number of years ago and did a little bit of additional research just for this message. But did you guys know that Japan builds what can be described of best as disposable houses? They're disposable houses. It's their culture in Japan is to build very short-term dwellings. They would think of a mortgage. You know how, and this has changed a little bit, and I'm not getting into the economics of it necessarily. This has changed a little bit since the housing bubble. But in a lot of ways, here in the United States particularly, we view houses as a long-term investment, right? It's kind of, it's a house, right? And so there's an investment there that's made. You keep them up, that sort of thing. Well, they would view, and that's how we kind of view house mortgages. Well, they would view a house mortgage much in the same way that we would view kind of a car payment. Okay? Is that you get to the end of its life, right? And if you're going kind of a traditional route where you're doing a car payment, right? Probably you might be able to get a few years out of that car, but probably not too long. You're looking for an upgrade, right? It's kind of interesting because that's the way that they view their houses. And they do this for a number of reasons. Number one, there's a cultural expectation that the house won't last. And one of the reasons for that is because of the occurrence of natural disasters. So because they are so susceptible to earthquakes, tsunamis, that sort of thing, they have a perspective on their homes that are such that, hey, why put so much work into this house that could very easily be destroyed just like that from a natural disaster? Kind of like, why would you build anything in New Orleans? But that's a different question for a different day. They have that perspective. There's also a very interesting case as far as Japanese government overregulation. So in this country, we're really familiar with, okay, being grandfathered into certain building codes, right? Like, for instance, the Americans with Disabilities Act, right? Anything new that is built has to be compliant with the ADA. But it's not like they went back and said, hey, the building is no good because it's not ADA compliant, and you must make this building ADA compliant. Now, if you're having an upgrade, I'm not a contractor, I don't know all that stuff, but there are times. Well, that's not it, how it is with the Japanese government. They said all of your buildings have to be compliant basically all of the time. So what happened was that the cost to make the buildings compliant with the overwhelming regulations that continued to come is that it costs way more to make anything else up to code than it would be to just destroy it and build it again. And so their perception of housing is completely different than the way that an American perception of housing would be. But I think that maybe that idea when it comes to housing might be a good idea for us to really apply to our lives here with the short amount of time that we have. It's a lot more disposable than we think that it is. It's a lot less stable than we typically assume. And I think that maybe people are a little bit more geared towards that over the past 2 or 3 years And I think that we can use that to our advantage in talking with people, because who saw this whole COVID crisis coming, right? But, you know, just to level here a little bit, and for us to think about this a little bit more, is that this isn't that new from one perspective, because Satan has a lot of different plays in his playbook. And he's using something like COVID now as a play in his playbook, but guys, that's not the only play he's got. And it's not the only play that he's used. And so we have to understand that he has other plays to go ahead and to try to run, and we need to be aware of those schemes and to understand that the stability of things is not nearly as stable as people assume. It's kind of interesting. We all knew that the Fed and all of that, that they were lying when they were telling us that there was, you know, 2% and 3% inflation rates, right? Like, it was like, yeah, that's a lie, right? But even now, right, recently, I don't know, but they're coming out with like 7% and 8% inflation rates because they can't even lie about it anymore, right? Well, you go to the grocery store and it's like, I think it's more like 20%, you know, 25%. Well, it's interesting because is there any financial system that's actually solid? A lot of it's an illusion, right? I mean, there's Bitcoin maximalists that'll tell you that come on, man. Like, come on. Like, is none of it solid? None of it's solid because it's all here. It's all here, which means that it's temporary, which means that even if it's solid throughout your life, it's still temporary. It's all temporary. And so understanding that our physical existence and our experiences and the things which are seen, that those experiences are so disposable, that they're so transient. It's here one minute, it's gone the next. And what did you do with it? And so the encouragement really is, be like Abraham. There's a reason why the scripture a lot of times will call us, you know, sons of Abraham, to have a faith like Abraham's. Let's go to Galatians 3 to illustrate this real quick. Galatians 3, we'll just pick up 16 to start. Now the promises were spoken to Abraham and to his seed. And he does not say into seeds, as referring to many, but rather to one, in your seed, that is Christ. See, the promises were to Abraham and to Jesus. Now, did he have physical descendants? Right. But that's not really the real fulfillment of that promise. He did have descendants. I mean, he had whole people groups through Ishmael, right? Not to mention, of course, the child of promise, Isaac. But remember, he got married again? And he had children from that marriage as well, didn't he? So he had descendants. That's not who that's really talking about. The promise is made to Abraham and to his seed, that is to Christ. And so Abraham, he is looking for promises that were not fulfilled in his lifetime. He's looking for a country that he's not going to reside in because he's looking for a spiritual city. Jump down to verse 26, and we'll do 26 through 29 and then hit 13 and 14. For you all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus, for all of you who are immersed into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. There's neither Jew nor Greek, there's neither slave nor free man, there's neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to promise. See, this connects with Romans chapter 2, verses 28 and 29. And the true son of Abraham, the true Jew, are those who are faithful to Jesus Christ. You want to be a son of Abraham. You want to be faithful, okay, to Jesus. Well, how many of those true heirs of Abraham did Abraham meet in the flesh? Well, Jesus in the flesh is not for another, you know, say, give or take 2,000 years or so. So exactly zero. But who's he looking to? What city is he looking to? He's looking to the city that is the church of the living God. And we're going to go there to Hebrews 12 in just a second. But if you go back to Galatians 3, this shows us earlier in the chapter in Galatians 3, 13 and 14, Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law, having become a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree, in order that in Christ Jesus the blessing of Abraham might come to the Gentiles, so that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith. So the blessing of Abraham isn't coming until the Gentiles get the Holy Spirit living inside of them. Well, how much of that did Abraham see in his day? But that's what he's looking to. And so Abraham is sure that that which is unseen is the reality. Are we sure that that which is unseen is the reality? That's what it means to live and walk by faith every day, isn't it? And so we see that Abraham believed God and it was reckoned to him as righteousness in Genesis 15, verses 5 and 6. Yeah, Abraham had a physical fulfillment of this promise, but that was not the promise he was really looking to. I don't want to leave out Sarah here. You know, if you go back to Hebrews chapter 11. We're going to hit this real quick and then just kind of talk about the city for a second. So Sarah, I want to bring out this point in verse 11. By faith, even Sarah herself received the ability to conceive even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Question. Okay. What's Sarah's initial response? Laughter. Excuse me? 90. 90. Grandkids, great grandkids, great great grandkids, maybe. Children? Nah. I don't think so. Right? You know, I embarrassed some people in Wauseon today. I said, you know, my mom just this past week turned 70. You know, Dennis, I think sometime this week or next week is turning 70. Bill turned 70 this year. There's a number of that are 70. Now, 70 is not 90. But none of them are having children, right? Like, they're not having kids. And that's why Sarah's initial reaction is to laugh. But that word considered is huge. Because Abraham believed God and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. And remember in the scriptures, a little bit later on, actually, I think we'll talk about this more next week, but Abraham considered that he would be able to bring Isaac from the dead. That's the same consideration here that Sarah is using towards her own dead womb, isn't it? That God is able to bring life from the dead.
She's thinking about it. She's considering it. That God is able to do what he says he's able to do because of who he is and because of what he has shown in the past. Again, that he who comes to God must believe that he is and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. She considered. God is able, is the conclusion that she came to. And so finally, it's the city that Abraham is looking towards, the city that doesn't have foundations because it's not a physical city. Go to Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, starting in verse 22. Hebrews 12, 22. But you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to myriads of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood, which speaks better than the blood of Abel. You have come to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. This is the city that Abraham was looking for, the city that we now are enrolled in, the city that we have our citizenship in. You have come. Again, we are in the Lord's church who is with Christ in glory right now. We have come to the heavenly Jerusalem. So do you believe in that which is unseen? The challenge is still there. Abraham pursued the inheritance. Are we pursuing the inheritance? Abraham was willing to leave that which is comfortable, that which was known, for that which was uncomfortable, but that which was called by God. And we've been called by God. And so, yeah, we've all got tents. Whether that's, you know, taking care of our, you know, physical body, whether that's the dwelling in which we live, whether that's responsibilities towards our family and food and drink, whether we've all got those tents, and sometimes the holes in the tents have to be attended to. But remember, that's not the city. That's not really where we live. That's not where our treasures are. We've come to the city that Abraham was searching for, and we have the opportunity to live and to walk by faith today, just as our father Abraham lived and walked by faith in his day. And we have such a greater picture. We live in the land that he desired to see. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for our time and our part in history.